A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. You should be happy enough this Friday morning. We're back to winning ways after losing three in a row. We scored three goals last night to beat Valencia 3-1 in the first leg of our Europa League semi-final. That, of course, will be the running theme throughout this podcast. I'll be chatting in a few minutes' time to James Benge of Football London. We're going to talk about that game, about the performances collectively, individually, and look ahead, I suppose, to this weekend against Brighton as well. You'll have to excuse my voice this morning. It's a little bit croaky. I don't know whether I've got a bit of a cold or something, but I've got a real frog in my throat. And, you know, that's not really the ideal place for a frog. It should be in a pond, I guess, on a lily pad or wherever it is that frogs hang out. I don't know. Frog bars and restaurants and nightclubs and wherever it is that people congregate to have a good time. Gymnasiums, saunas, where else? I don't know. Bus stops? People don't really hang out at bus stops to have a good time. They just sort of wait there for a bus to arrive. Anyway, the point is, you know, I might just sound a little off at times during this podcast. Before we get going, though, on the football and all that, something I did notice last night, it was particularly prevalent, and it's something that has become a thing over the last number of years, is footballers, when they talk to each other, covering their mouths. I guess this is because there are so many cameras in football stadia these days. And I don't suppose as a footballer you can be sure if there's a camera on you or not. You could just be sitting there on the bench minding your own business, as Bernd Leno was last night, tucking into what seemed like a healthy meal. He had a big, big mouthful of food. Maybe he was just doing a Shea Given impression. I don't know what it was. But you can't be sure if there's a camera on you and you turn around and you mouth the words, "Look at that fucking idiot," to somebody beside you, and all of a sudden the cameras have picked it up and they're going, "Who is he calling a fucking idiot?" I don't know. So now, when footballers talk to each other, when they're on the pitch, at halftime, going off at halftime, after the game, you just see them all standing there with their hand over their mouth. So it's like, and the other guy's like, you know, it's a thing. I feel like there could be a business opportunity here. Like, what if you were to invent a language and only teach it to footballers? So footballers could communicate properly with their mouths out in the open rather than having to go, and they could just talk and nobody would be able to lip read because no lip reader would understand the words that they were saying. Is this a thing? Am I overthinking this a bit? Feels like I probably am. I just think it's a bit odd, isn't it, to see grown men standing there covering their mouths going, "Look at that fucking idiot over there." We all know they're saying, "Look at that fucking idiot over there," but we don't know which fucking idiot they're actually talking about. I mean, at some point, we're bound to get, like, X-ray cameras, aren't we? So they'll be able to see through the player's hands. They need to get on top of this before technology fucks them. And they can stand there going, and everyone goes, "Look, he just said that guy's a fucking idiot." "Which guy?" "That guy over there. The guy over there," he said. "He's the fucking idiot." There are a lot of fucking idiots in the world of football. But you won't catch me naming names. No, sir. I mean, I will absolutely name some names, like, and he's, yeah, you know, and he's definitely a fucking idiot. And what about, he's a fucking idiot too. I think we should get on with the football. Let's do it. Let's chat about Arsenal 3, Valencia 1, and all the implications, all the performances, and what it might mean for this weekend's game against Brighton as well, and of course for the second leg next week in Spain. Delighted to welcome to the show from Football London, James Benge. Hi, James.
Hi, Andrew. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you, and pleasure to actually talk about a game that's a positive. You know, after the last week or so, it's been a bit grim, so it's nice to have a good result to talk about. However, we're going to start on a little bit of a negative note, because the game started on a little bit of a negative note for Arsenal. As I think I and many other people try and identify what exactly is Unai Emery's style, what are the key characteristics of his team, one of the things that occurs to me, or certainly strikes me, this season with Arsenal is the number, the sheer number, and the quality of the chances that we give to the opposition. And that was on display again last night, having started with lots of the ball. A free kick gave Valencia a chance to create a brilliant opportunity for Garay. I don't know, you know, how he put that over the bar from 6 yards out, or maybe less. The goal was forthcoming then shortly afterwards. It was far from ideal, and a team which has lost three in a row, conceded three goals in each of those games. Do you think that the nerves or lack of confidence were on display in that opening few minutes?
See, I didn't really feel like it was a lack of confidence. I think, because going forward, and in terms of how they were building up, it wasn't amazing, but it wasn't too bad. I kind of just thought it felt disorganised again, which I don't get when you're playing, you know, three centre-backs who all know roughly what they're doing in theory, if not in practice, and, you know, a solid midfield base in front of them. But I just thought that these players don't really seem to know what the plan is. And they went out there not sure, whenever Valencia got the ball, are we going to press high up the pitch and try and win it back, or are we going to drop back and settle into a sort of five-man defence? And, you know, I thought that was where the problems came from. And as you say, Andrew, same story over and over again, where, you know, the defence seems a little bit timid early in the game. You know, their heads drop when things start going wrong, and there's no way of arresting a crisis. And that was what was so remarkable about the turnaround. But yeah, I didn't necessarily think it was I just don't know how to explain it, honestly. I wish I had some idea, but it's such simple mistakes as well. I was just watching back the goal now, and I mean, that's not a goal that players like Socrates and Koscielny should allow to be conceded on their watch, is it?
No, I mean, I think you can look across the defensive line there and say we could have been a bit more aggressive, and I feel like that's kind of an issue in terms of how we defend, that there isn't enough aggression and front-footedness at times, and I suppose one of the guys who comes in for a lot of stick, and, you know, he does make mistakes, is Mustafi. And I'm not singling him out or anything like it, but in terms of the way he tries to defend, he's often caught committing to things that he probably shouldn't commit to. But at the same time, there's a measure of effort, or at least endeavour, that isn't always there in our defending. I think you can look at Granit Xhaka for that goal and say, you know, he could really have done better. Maybe we could have done better with the man on the back post as well. Socrates beaten to the header. Xhaka, you know, Diakabi was there, a clutch of Arsenal players around him, but he was the strongest and he was the one who got the ball.
Yeah, I agree absolutely. I think you've made a really good point there about how Mustafi kind of, he's doing what you want, even if he's not doing it very well. And I think it comes back sometimes maybe to the wing-backs. I just think, in a defensive terms, I don't really see Kolasinac using, you know, his natural assets. He's a big, powerful guy, but I never see him, you know, properly trying to impose himself on the opposition. And, I mean, it's the same with Maitland-Niles, and obviously, you know, he's not a right wing back, so he kind of gets a bit of a giveaway there. But Kolasinac, you know, you want him to go out and hit whoever he's up against in the first 5 minutes and just sort of say, I'm here.
But yeah,
you're so meek. Xhaka's the same. I really like Guendouzi's attitude, but again, he's, you know, he's a kid and he doesn't always throw himself into to things. I mean, you could totally see the difference when Torreira came on in terms of that. He was just pressing any player wherever they were. It was fantastic.
I think it's a good point about Kolasinac, because what he tends to do is, if he uses his physicality, he makes a silly foul rather than providing a kind of sturdiness to our defence. I mean, if you're a right winger, if you're playing on the right hand side and you're looking at someone like, say, Kolasinac, and you're thinking, oh, well, this guy's fucking huge. He could run me over if he wanted to, but he never really does. I mean, I think there's, you know, the size is clearly a thing people like about Kolasinac, but I'm not sure he uses that as well as he could. But I think that could be true about certain elements or other elements of his game as well. You know, the amount of times that he gets into a good position to put the ball in the box, and it's very much hit and hope with him, isn't it? And I thought that was quite interesting. You know, when you look at the third goal that we scored, there was deliberateness, there was a little bit of precision. You could see what he was trying to do with the ball that he put to the back post for Aubameyang. Whereas for 89 minutes previous to that, he's just got his head down and he's lashing it towards the near post, towards wherever, without any real intent. And the minute that he did try something that was deliberate, it paid off.
He's like me playing FIFA when I get in a crossing position where I'm like, well, if I just whack this, something might happen. And I mean, he's too good to just whack it. I mean, although having said that, I would, you know, as I say, I would love it if he just started whacking his opponents, because he's when he arrived, we were all so excited to see this physically imposing Arsenal defender that we haven't seen in a decade, and he just doesn't use any of his raw attributes. He doesn't take players on and push right to the byline in an attacking sense, and then on the defensive end, you know, he ends up getting in foot races that he can't win against pacey fullbacks and wingers. It drives me mad, because he's such a good player in there.
I mean, maybe. You know, I'm not 100% convinced. I think, you know, if Arsenal were to go out and buy a left back this summer and Kolasinac was our backup, I'd be very, very, very happy with that. But, you know, we'll see what he can do between now and the end of the season. So we're a goal down. It's not ideal. You could feel almost there was a little bit of an effect on the crowd as well, because, you know, there's high hopes going into European semi-final. There's also an understanding that away from home, we're not particularly good. So in order to have a real chance of going through in this tie, conceding an away goal is a bad thing, and we all understand that. But I really liked the response from Lacazette. The TV cameras, as soon as the goal went in, cut to him, and he's pointing at his temple, and he's shouting, you know, around, urging focus, telling his teammates, you know, to come on and let's get back into this. And after a couple of weeks in which the strikers have received little or no service, I think it would be fair to say, in terms of providing opportunities for them on goal, they took it into their own hands in many ways, and the response that they showed, above all, I know you can talk about the character of the team, but I really think Lacazette and Aubameyang last night absolutely drove this team forward. The first goal was really, really great. It looked simple, and great goals often look simple, but there was a lot of hard work involved in that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was that brilliant mix of, as you say, the hard work and then the superb raw attributes that these two £50 million strikers have. I think it's the first time in a while I can really remember seeing Aubameyang putting the afterburners on, and you sort of go, oh, Jesus Christ, this guy is so fast. Mm. But then it's the composure that so many other Arsenal players sometimes lack in these situations, to just take that touch. Neto's come out, and you're not going to try and do the difficult thing and lob him or run around him, or, you know, you can feel that the pressure's on you, but you know that Lacazette, because you've got this brilliant telepathic relationship with him, you know you'll find him, and then it's an easy finish for Lacazette. But as you say, it's not an easy goal to score at all. And I was hugely, hugely impressed with Aubameyang in that, just in terms of that's what you signed him for, isn't it? The explosive pace, but then just the intelligence to know I'm not perfectly placed for this. It doesn't matter who scores the goal. It just matters that the goal gets scored. And a good finish by Lacazette as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a relatively simple finish, but it was born out of the, you know, the hard work and the effort and the endeavour and actually just putting the yards in and making sure that he was busting a gut to get up there and support Aubameyang. So, you know, it's nice to see the two of them combine for an assist and a goal. And then Lacazette scored again. Xhaka, I was watching this passage of play and we had the ball over on the left-hand side and Xhaka had it and then Kolasinac had it and then Ozil had it and then they were passing it back and forth between them for a little while. And I remember thinking in my head, God, we're very left-footed out there. We're a bit too left-footed out there. Maybe we need to be... Oh, he scored a goal. And it was a lovely ball from Xhaka who, you know, on a night where you were maybe looking for Mesut Ozil to pull the creative strings, it was actually Xhaka who did that more than the German.
Yeah, definitely. I thought it took him about 15 minutes to realise he was playing in a game. But then he did, and he did everything that kind of has made him such an impressive performer this season. He kept the ball moving. When Arsenal had the chances to kind of counter with a few numbers, you knew he was the one that was going to play that pass. I mean, we all think of sort of how tough it is for Arsenal without Santi Cazorla, and Xhaka is nowhere near the player that Santi was at his best. But you do see that in terms of having someone that can really playmake from deep and can offer Ozil another option when he kind of is forced to check backwards. I thought for the goal, it was a pretty good cross, but at the same time, it left Lacazette so much to do, and he does it so well. You know, Neto could have done more. Like, it wasn't really the most impressive save I've ever seen, but Lacazette did everything he could to make that difficult for him, heading it down into the ground. It bounced at such an awkward height. You know, I thought, again, I'm going back onto Lacazette, but what a phenomenal player this guy is. He can do the lot. And yeah, credit to Xhaka for just putting that ball in the right position for him.
Yeah, he really does have a tendency to step up in big games, Lacazette. There are times where you look at him and you think, could he do a bit more, you know, in other games? But he's got a real character about him. And I think there's a determination and a kind of confidence about him in the way that he plays in these games. You know, he looks like a player who really wants to drive the team, someone who really feels like he belongs in this team now. You know, and two goals. I know we can talk in a minute maybe about his misses in the chances he missed, not his wife, in the second half. But, you know, to come out of that game having scored two big goals, it really does say a lot about him. And, you know, his goal tally hasn't always been quite as impressive as you might like, but it's creeping upwards. And if he can get a couple more between now and the end of the season, it'll look very healthy indeed.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I think it's like a goal every other game. You know, I was looking at his stats for a piece I was working on last night, and it's sort of like a goal every other game. And you kind of think, I mean, for a £50 million striker, that's fine. It's not amazing. But then when you see the guy in the flesh, I'm convinced he's one of the best number nines in Europe in terms of everything he does. You know, he's always the one that starts the press. And, you know, compared to Aubameyang and Ozil, he's probably the only one that's actually doing the press. And then, as you say, he's a big game hunter. You know, I think he scored against every single one of the top six. You know, he scored now as many European semi-final goals as Ian Wright, I think. He's just, he does raise his game for the big occasions. And sometimes in the Premier League, you need someone that's a 9 out of 10 every week. But I love watching Lacazette because I think he does everything. He's so unselfish. It's amazing, I think, as well, the response he's had to 6 months into his Arsenal career. Arsenal effectively turn around and go, oh, we think we need a better striker than you. We need Aubameyang. Mm. And his response to that has been, well, I'm both going to be the perfect partner for Aubameyang and a better player than Aubameyang. You know, I'm going to do the things that Oba doesn't. It is really impressive. I worry that if Arsenal don't get into the Champions League this season and maybe next season, someone is going to notice how good a player Lacazette is. And I don't think you could blame him for looking elsewhere because, you know, if he's a big game player, he's the sort of player I'd want in a Champions League, whether I'm Arsenal or not.
I mean, look, he scored this season against Liverpool. He scored against Tottenham. He scored against Chelsea. He scored, against Napoli away from home. When it comes right down to it, if you've got a big game, you'd fancy him to get a goal. And look, I think the combination between himself and Aubameyang is something to enjoy as well. We hear it all the time about what great mates they are and what a relationship that they have off the pitch. But that in itself is, when you step back from it, we take it for granted in a way. It's rare for two strikers who have come to a club with a big price tag, both of whom, will want to play week in, week out, and both of whom will want to score, that there's a sort of compatibility between them, which I think Arsenal, in a way, are lucky that they found that, because it could have been a situation which sees two players at odds with each other, but they like each other and they play well together, not just because they like each other. I mean, you can like whoever you like, but you might not work together on the pitch. I think the two of them do work together on the pitch. And maybe that's just something Arsenal have got a little bit lucky with, considering the way the transfers went down.
It's complete and utter blind luck, because then you go and look at Chelsea and Olivier is so incredibly unhappy there because he's having to play second fiddle. It's luck, but what a lucky break. I mean, you can't complain having two £50 million strikers that, as you say, they love spending time with each other. It's a great friendship. It's up there with Flamini and Ozil for one of the great Arsenal bromances of recent years.
What about the second half then? How concerned were you that, A, we might not find another goal, because a two-goal cushion going into the away leg is healthy, not quite as healthy as we might like. I think a clean sheet obviously would have been better. A 2-0 would have been better than 3-1, but the game was in a weird state, wasn't it? Because Valencia didn't want to concede and Arsenal didn't really want to commit too many men forward, because another away goal would have made next week's game a real problem. So to get the third goal in the end, having missed a couple of good chances, Lacazette heading fresh air, and then he was clean through, wasn't he? And the keeper made a good save. I think it was one of those where if he'd been maybe a couple of yards further out, it would have been a goal, but he was so close to the keeper, it was a bit more difficult than we appreciate at the time.
Yeah, I thought it was frustrating, but I mean, he's taken one quite difficult chance there. It's not necessarily like it would have been Lacazette's fault if Arsenal don't go through. Obviously, the Aubameyang goal is crucial, but kind of the one thing that impressed me was just how solid Arsenal looked at the back. And again, it makes it all the weirder that they looked so open in those early minutes. I mean, yeah, you had that chance when I think it was Gamero got through and Cech saved very well. But look, Valencia aren't a bad team, and if they're going to create one or two chances against you. But actually, I thought, going back to what we were saying earlier, Arsenal were defending on the front foot. Koscielny, Socrates, and Mustafi were all winning the ball back high up the pitch, and that just meant that Arsenal don't have to commit too many men forward, but they can keep the ball where they want it. It was a lot of cycling possession around the sort of midfield, around parts of the Valencia half, not committing too many men forward. But then, when the chance came, Aubameyang finally finished. That he'd missed as many good chances as Lacazette as well. So he took that goal very well, but it should have been a penalty, even if he hadn't scored.
What did I miss there? Have I got to watch it again?
Oh, yeah. If you look at it, Torreira goes absolutely flying. I'm looking at it now. I can't quite see who the Valencia defender is, but Torreira's waiting for a cross, and he's absolutely pulled back by, I think it's the number four for Valencia, just pulls him to the ground. But Aubameyang scores, so who cares?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at that one. Yeah, I did notice Torreira in the middle on the ground, but watching Aubameyang score the goal and do a celebration, I was, okay, we'll see. Okay, I wonder what the referee have given it, if he'd missed it.
He didn't referee very well for the game, I thought. I thought it was quite poorly refereed, yeah. So he probably missed it.
Doesn't matter, because the ball went in the net in the end. You mentioned that chance for Gamero, which came about because Koscielny had just switched off a little bit for probably the only time in the game where he switched off. And I think it was because basically he's exhausted. He looks like a very tired man. I think in the last couple of weeks, he has probably been overplayed, given the circumstances in which he finds himself in, you know, at his age, at 33, which is not over the hill or anything like it. But, you know, he's got to be managed. His fitness has got to be managed. And he, as much as anybody, knows that, that there's a limit to what he can do coming back from that injury. And maybe he's been played a little more than he might like in recent weeks. And he switched off just for that moment, and that was a chance for Gamero and Cech made a save. But, you know, it was 10 more minutes before Unai Emery made the substitution and put Nacho Monreal on, which I was a little bit surprised at, because fairly early in the second half, I was wondering if Koscielny might be a guy to make way, because, you know, when he runs and when he's at full sprint, he runs like a man who is in pain. And he runs like a man who is running to try and offset, you know, like if you've got a sore heel or something, or you've got a, you run on the balls of your feet, whatever it is, he's running like a guy who's trying to like lessen the pain that he's in. He's absolutely putting himself and his body on the line for this team at the moment, because he obviously feels like there's unfinished business in the Europa League after what happened last season in Madrid. How impressed were you with him last night? I know we can't really talk about the previous games because they haven't gone our way and you can point fingers at our defense and all that kind of stuff. But I have to say, last night, I loved what Koscielny did. I think Emery probably could have taken him off a bit sooner, but for as long as he was out there, he gave everything he had.
He's absolutely phenomenal. I first saw Lauren limping in about the 10th or 15th minute. And I was looking at him then and I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy can scarcely walk. And I totally agree with you. Sometimes it looks like he's running just because if he can run and put it, you know, push himself a bit further, the pain maybe hurts less. I don't know. But in the short term, you just cannot like help but walk away from a lot of Arsenal games at the moment and go, God, I can't believe what Koscielny is putting himself through, because there's very rare that he doesn't finish a game looking in some form of pain. And it was absolutely remarkable what he was doing for the cause. And I've kind of had my issues before about his leadership in terms of I personally would like a more vocal captain. But when you see a guy that's clearly injured running himself to the ground for the Arsenal cause, it can't help but convince you know, whether you're Lacazette, Aubameyang, whoever, Kolasinac, Maitland-Niles, so just give that extra 5%, because this guy is playing with serious injuries. You know, he's got an ongoing Achilles issue in addition to the broken Achilles or whatever it was that he had a year ago. And, you know, there's part of you that thinks, God, long term, what is Lauren doing to his fitness after football just to make this contribution to Arsenal in the final days of the season?
Yeah,
but you can't help but admire him for it.
Yeah, I have to say, just looking at him, and I hope I'm wrong about this, but if at the end of this season he were to say, look, I can't do it at this level anymore, either maybe go back to France and play, you know, a year where it's not quite as physically intense, or he calls it a day, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I know we've had this amazing story, haven't we? And they've put him through this fitness regime, and that incredible video that the club made, which showed you the recuperation and what he went through to come back, which is remarkable in itself. But looking at the guy last night, I wouldn't be that surprised if this were his final season, which makes it all the more important that we go the distance this time in Europe. How do you feel like we're set up for the second leg now? Are you confident enough with 3-1? I mean, I think 2-1 would have been quite edgy. 3-1, I know they have the away goal, but I do feel like we can score against this team as long as we don't let the away thing get into our heads, which I think is one of the big challenges that Unai Emery faces, because I think it is very close to the forefront of the players' minds.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, you talk to the players after the away games at the moment, and they're just like, God, we don't know what. We don't know what it is, but we don't understand. You know, we don't feel like we know how to fix this away problem. But yeah, look, you know, that Valencia back line had, what, six defenders on the pitch and looked like Arsenal could kind of breach it whenever they felt like it. So you back Arsenal to get an away goal in this. And then I think kind of it's pretty hard to lose from that position. You know, if they remember how professionally they dealt with the Napoli game, I don't really think Valencia have anything to worry them. I just wanted to say one more thing on Koscielny.
Yeah.
Because I think we all forget that injury he suffered, again and again, you know, before he suffered that injury, he had those chronic Achilles issues. That cost him the World Cup. You know, that cost him the chance to win the World Cup. And, you know, I know that as well as possibly the Europa League, and I hope, you know, without any fan hat on, with solely as a, you know, with my journalistic hat on, I'd still love to see Laurent Koscielny get that kind of reward of a Europa League winner's medal. And yeah, I think Arsenal are pretty well placed to at least get to the final. Wouldn't shock me as well if Frankfurt maybe do them a few favours and they don't have to play Chelsea in the final, which would be massive.
Oh my God, I'd love that. I mean, I say that with all due respect to Frankfurt, because if you get to the final and you beat Chelsea on the way, then you're a good team and you can't take anything for granted. But I just think in terms of going into that game, if we were to get there, I would so much rather play Frankfurt than Chelsea. It's too... I don't like European games against English clubs. There's just something about them that I can never enjoy them, I don't think. If we were to win, of course, it would be amazing. But I just think from a European final spectacle point of view, or just how the game is perceived, Frankfurt versus Arsenal or Arsenal versus Frankfurt would be great. And I think what's interesting about next week as well is that Valencia, as a team who don't score a huge amount of goals, they've only scored 40 goals in La Liga this season, it's not necessarily their strength. Playing on the front foot and attacking is not how they usually set up. And they're going to have to, because they've got to overturn a two-goal lead. So if Arsenal can use the intelligence and the pace of their forwards and the creativity that they might have behind them, then, you know, there's a good chance we go through. Just quickly, what did you make of Mesut Ozil's performance last night? I mean, I sort of expected a bit more from him at home in a game like this. But I thought in general he was pretty tidy, very, what's the word I'm going to use here? Economical with possession. He didn't lose the ball, kept it ticking over, and maybe left it for someone like Xhaka to play the passes.
Yeah, exactly that. I thought it was fine. And it's really nice, you know, kind of because he's such a divisive figure, it's just really nice when he's just fine and you don't really have to talk about him that much.
Yeah.
I love that because, you know, you can only set yourself up for a fall in the world of Arsenal Twitter when Mesut Ozil is the topic of conversation. So yeah, he kept the ball really well. He kept possession moving. He didn't necessarily create a huge number of chances, but like, he was good enough. A 6 or 7 out of 10, that's absolutely fine by me.
All right.
Don't have to talk about him.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. Just looking ahead very briefly to this weekend then, amazingly, it's still possible for Arsenal to finish in the top four. It's unlikely, but it's still possible. You know, if Chelsea can drop points to Frankfurt, they can drop points to... Who are they playing? I should have looked this up, shouldn't I?
Watford at home and then Leicester away.
Right, okay. So two games in which it's potentially possible for them to drop points. Of course, it's incumbent on Arsenal taking probably maximum points from their final two games. Brighton at home this weekend. I mean, I think there has to be a measure of rotation for this game, simply because a lot of those players, you know, who put in a lot on Thursday night will probably need a bit of a rest for the away leg. Certainly Koscielny, if he's involved, I'd be flabbergasted if he were involved. But it is an important game, and also a game in which there'll be some goodbyes from a couple of players. So first, how do you see Emery approaching this one? Is he going to... I mean, I know he doesn't have a huge squad anyway, but he is going to have to shift things around a little bit, isn't he?
Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting that he didn't start Torreira, who was absolutely fully fit. And I suspect that's kind of with an eye on Brighton, and you have one midfielder who's coming into the game at near 100%. And he'll start. And I think a lot of that was like Emery kind of thinking, well, if I don't start Torreira and Xhaka on Thursday night, I definitely don't have to start Elneny on Sunday. I think similarly, like someone like Monreal might come in. I don't know if he would go for Iwobi and Mkhitaryan because they've been really rubbish of late. But I think maybe one of the strikers drops out. That aside, I think you're going to have to keep the core of this team together because the options on the bench, again, are sort of so sparse. Really missing this stage of the season is the stage where you really feel like you're missing Danny Welbeck because you look on that bench for sort of, I need to throw someone on to get me a goal. And it's sort of like, bless Eddie Nketiah. But
yeah,
I mean, Unai Emery is throwing him hospital pass after hospital pass.
Yeah, he's not ready really. And he's sort of at a point, isn't he, where he might just be stagnating.
Because I'm worried about that a lot.
Yeah, you know, he does need to go and play. Simple as that. Look, we'll wait and see what he does there. Just a couple of final things. One of the sad stories of the week is the fact that Aaron Ramsey's hamstring injury means he's played his last game for Arsenal, which I think is a terrible shame. Even if we were to make it to the final in Baku, which doesn't take place until maybe the 26th or the 29th of May, you know, almost a full month, he's not going to be ready. It's disappointing for him, obviously, not to be able to say goodbye on the pitch the way that many players have. And disappointing that he's not going to be able to score another cup final winner for us, particularly against Chelsea, if that were to be the case. But in a weird way, there's something sort of fitting, not fitting, but Ramsey's Arsenal career finishing with an injury after an injury-plagued 10 years with the club seems in some ways apt, regardless of how disappointing it is. And, you know, I love the guy. I think he's brilliant. But maybe it's just an indication of why, as a club, perhaps we need to move on, even if we didn't handle this situation as well as we could have.
Yeah, it is a reminder that you ultimately would have been paying £200,000 a week for a player that I think, I can't remember when exactly Wenger said this, but he has said before that Ramsey needed constant management in terms of his injury load, and you couldn't quite play him week in, week out as you could others. I think as well, look, the reason he did his hamstring, I think he was desperately trying to reach a loose ball. And I think that kind of spoke to what his attitude had been like in those final weeks. I know Emery spoke about how Ramsey wanted to do something special before he left the club, which I think for me, you know, I was never quite sure where I kind of how I viewed Ramsey. He was obviously one of the few players that kind of turned up consistently in the big games, but you know, he drove you mad sometimes in other games with his ill discipline tactically. But you know, his response to going to Juventus wasn't what I think we would all do when we're getting a new job, which is coast our way through the final months of our last job, yeah. waiting to move to Turin and live a lovely life in the piazzas of Italy. He was just absolutely driven, and that probably is what kind of caused that hamstring. You know, he was chasing every single loose ball, doing his best in attack and defence. It was kind of inevitable it would break down, but yeah, he's such a loss to Arsenal just in terms of being an absolute stand-up guy and someone that really holds this club very dearly in his heart. And I'm sure he's going to get a fantastic reception at the Emirates on Sunday, which I kind of think even back when it was announced he was going to Juventus, I think if he'd said then, there won't be a single person in the stadium grumbling about Aaron Ramsey having left. I think you would have probably thought that was quite unlikely. So just the measure of the man that he's given his all in these final few months.
There is talk. I don't know if you can confirm this one way or the other, if you've spoken to anybody at the club about what the plans are. But I saw it posited during the week that there might be a guard of honour for Aaron Ramsey. And also a guard of honour for Petr Cech, who's playing his, or who will be involved in his final home game before his retirement. He probably won't play because Bernd Leno will play in the Premier League, and there's still something to play for. So there's no room for sentimentality when it comes to team selection. But do we know if Danny Welbeck is also involved in any potential guard of honour? Because he too is out of contract. He's been at the club longer than Petr Cech. Do we know anything about that? And if he's not involved, does that tell us perhaps that there might be something going on behind the scenes about Welbeck's future?
Interesting. I know that there will be a guard of honour, and I know that Cech and Ramsey will be involved, but I don't think Welbeck will.
Right.
Now,
right.
Well,
yeah.
I think...
That would make you think, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would. You know, you would still come down on the side of Arsenal going to say, thank you very much for your excellent service, Danny, for putting all this into the cause, but bye-bye, time to move on. But I don't think they've entirely ruled out, 100% ruled out the possibility of handing him a contract extension. I think, you know, a lot of it will depend on things like who's available in the summer, because if you take a look at the sort of the players that they're looking at to strengthen in wide areas, someone like Ryan Fraser can't function as your third choice striker.
No.
So if money's tight, and if Danny were willing to take a pay cut or be on some, and this is just me speculating here, this isn't reporting, and I know that this will probably appear on Twitter, and then a few hours later, Danny will confirm Welbeck's off, and I'll look like an idiot. But it wouldn't shock me. Well, it would shock me, but I wouldn't be like, I could never have seen that coming. I think it's maybe a 5% chance, but I don't think he'll be there for a guard of honour.
Right.
If he is, we can pretty much take for certain that he's going. But I wouldn't make a definitive decision on Welbeck just yet. He's a useful player, even if he is, you know, he's useful.
Yeah.
I'd be tempted to keep him around.
Look, I can see, given the circumstances, given the budget that we have, I can see a logic in giving a 2-year deal to Danny Welbeck and maybe at the end of 12 months decide to sell him and cash in. You know, he's somebody who could perhaps provide, obviously provide backup to the strikers. He could provide a bit of experience and help nurture somebody like Rhys Nelson, who's probably going to be part of the first team squad, take a little bit of the burden off a young player on whom expectations will be placed if he's beginning to start games, you know, for the club. So I can see it. I just, you know, I would be very surprised. I can see the logic in it. And maybe I'll try and find out. Maybe we can try and find out what the situation with Welbeck is, because if it is a case that he's leaving and they're giving a guard of honour to Ramsey and Cech, it would be a bit mean to leave him out, you know, because whatever else Danny Welbeck is, he's definitely one of the good guys.
I'm going to petition Arsenal that we get the debut appearance of Petr Cech's new single on Sunday. I don't know if you've seen this, but apparently he's bringing out his own single. So I think it would be absolute nonsense if there isn't a drum kit in the middle of the Emirates Stadium for him to go absolutely mad on.
That would be something. Just for the record, this is apparently a charity single that he's releasing with Roger Taylor from Queen. So whatever... It is a bit bizarre, but I think we have to put it in that context. So, you know, in the pantheon of football songs or songs by footballers, you know, it would have to be really, 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 really bad to be one of the worst songs of all time released by a footballer, because there's some fucking terrible ones out there.
I'm so ready for it to be an absolute tune. I think it's going to be brilliant. I've just decided. I'm going to love it no matter what.
All right, well, we'll see. Maybe they'll play that when they're giving him the guard of honour and Danny Welbeck is sitting on the bench going, what about me? Why did you leave me here?
At least a single Danny, then you'll get a guard of honour.
Exactly. All right, James, listen, thanks a million for your time. Really appreciate it. James Benge from Football London.
Thank you.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanks very much indeed to James. You can find him on Twitter at James Benge, at James Benge, and also writing about Arsenal for Football London. So what else is there left to say? We've talked about Valencia. We've looked ahead briefly to the Brighton game on Sunday. What kind of a team we'll put out? I mean, we have to try and win that game just in case Chelsea fuck it up somewhere along the way. We've got to make sure we take 3 points. At the same time, though, I guess we can't ignore the fact there is a European semi-final second leg on Thursday against Valencia. Thursday to Sunday. Sunday to Thursday does give us a bit of time to rest and recuperate. And at this point of the season, you're asking players just to push through the tiredness and the fatigue and everything else. So I guess we can make some changes on Sunday, but not too many. And hopefully we can take 3 points. We can say goodbye to Aaron Ramsey for the last time at the Emirates with a win, to Petr Cech for the last time at the Emirates with a win, and maybe also Danny Welbeck, who has probably already played his final game for the club. That was back in November when he got injured, but he deserves a goodbye too. We'll wait and see what happens on Sunday, what kind of a team we'll get, what kind of festivities there might be. 3 points, a lap of appreciation, all that kind of stuff. I can't believe it's the final home game of the season. I just don't know where the time has gone. Anyway, look, thank you very much indeed for being here. Hope you've enjoyed the show. There's plenty more to listen to on our Patreon. If you're not already a member, you can join for a fiver a month, patreon.com/arsblog. Lots more podcasts on there. And if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon, you also get these podcasts ad free. So that's something to consider as well. Please give us a rating or review on iTunes if you feel like doing that. If you don't worry about it. It seems like a lot of hassle. So don't worry about it in the slightest. James and I will have an Arscast extra for you on Monday, but because he's away doing comedy things with his comedy friends, we're not going to be able to record until Monday evening, so the Arscast Extra will be a little later than usual this week, but we will have it for you at some point on Monday. In the meantime, have yourselves a great weekend. Let's keep fingers crossed for 3 points for Arsenal against Brighton on Sunday. I'll catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Holy God FM. There you go, one of the greatest pianists of our time, Bruce Hornsby and The Range. Many people ask what set him apart. Why was his piano so plinky plonky compared to other people? And the truth is, God gave him fingers like a lemur's arm. We've got a text here from Virgil. Virgil says, "Dear Holy God FM, I'm very sad about what happened to me during the week. I didn't have my finest moment, even though I prayed to the Lord to make it a good night for me. But it wasn't. What did I do wrong?" Look, Virgil, you didn't do anything wrong apart from totally switch off at key moments. But the truth is, Why should you get special treatment ahead of the other 21 players on the pitch? That's just not how it works, no matter how many times you do the sign of the cross. It's coming up on 12 minutes to the hour, taking us closer to the news and weather. An exciting moment in pop history. Another great song by a footballer. We all know how amazing they've been down the years. Think of Diamond Lights. Think of Fog on the Tyne. And we here at Holy God FM are proud to debut the new hip-hop single from Andre Arshavin. It's called Look at That Fucking Idiot Over There.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.